Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Returning for the 300th time, something like that, is Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. He joins me for our quarterly look back at AEW business. We tackle Q3 of the financial calendar, July, August, and September. Went a little long this time. Went into a couple of rants and a couple rabbit holes and so on and so forth. Mitt Romney's name comes up in this podcast. Have you listened to a podcast today that mentions Mitt Romney and also mentions like Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay and all that? So we talk about the 3-month period in AEW business, got some numbers and some insights and some thoughts and some concerns, things we're thinking about in the months ahead. So stick around for an hour and a half. Yes, an hour and a half. Actually more than that, of pro wrestling talk with myself and Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics, talking about AEW business for July, August, September 2025. Enjoy.
Welcome to the AEW Investors Call. As a reminder, all lines are muted. If you would like to ask a question, please click star 69 on your telephone. I will now turn the call over to Josh Nason of Wrestling Observer and Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. Please go ahead, Josh.
Once again, he has returned for his 3,000th appearance, I think, on the show. Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics has returned.
How long have you been doing this for?
Let's see. You were on, remember, as people, actually people may not know this, you've mentioned it as we've talked about before, that I believe your very first podcast appearance was on this very show. So it was quite a long time ago.
Either my first, one of my very first, definitely.
Yeah, I went back and looked, and it was a different name as well.
I was using my middle name.
Yes.
I'm using the full real name. I have verified this. I've showed my ID to John Pollock in real life, in person, at a baseball game, to verify that my real first name and real last name are Brandon and Thurston, respectively.
Mm. Did you, like, before you even said hello to him, did you show your ID? And just to prove it was you, did he ask for it? Did he request this ID to verify it was you?
The subject of people not using their real names came up. And I said,
yes. Yeah, that's happened before once or twice. Brandon and I are here once again to talk about AEW quarter of business. Again, they don't offer any public documentation. So
unfortunately.
Fortunately, maybe one of these days we'll see.
No, they never. This company is never going public.
No, they're never there. Beatnik Investments?
Beatnik Investments. I don't know if they'll even confirm that that's really the underlying entity.
Well, I mean, we can speculate. We can. I don't want to get
We don't need to speculate. We have public records that say so.
True. But who knows? Who knows? Beatniks. Just see the Khan family at the coffee shop snapping their fingers, listening to some jazz and things like that, as the Beatniks used to do.
So it's a relatively old LLC that has been around for a long time that Shad used for other business projects.
Well, there you go. And Brandon's talked about that before, of course. But we're going to talk about Q3, so July, August, and September. We'll talk about all the different news and notes. No storyline stuff. That'll be in a podcast I do later this week with Mike Della Camera. Yes, one of the best last names in the business. Mike Della Camera is his real name, and he and I are going to talk about.
Have you seen his ID?
I actually have not. I've met him in person, but I did not check his ID.
No. Might not be. You always have to do that.
Actually, I'm going to have him show his license, or any type of government ID, as we get birth certificate. I'll take that before we start the podcast.
Passport, maybe.
Yeah. I've never asked a guest for their passport before. Maybe I think I should start doing that. Brian, I did, before we get talking here, I did some Capital J journalism today just
Really?
to celebrate our union here.
That's rare in the world.
It is. It is. And how I did is I simply asked a question and I got an answer,
Uh-oh.
which was good. Not a huge one. But if you remember, I think it was last Thursday, WBD posted a press release about some upcoming programming for November. And some wrestling media found this a couple days later and learned that there was going to be a 3-hour Combo Dynamite Collision leading into Full Gear. That Collision is going to air on Thanksgiving Day instead of going head to head with the Survivor Series. And also, it listed two lines, which was November 21st, the Battle of the Belts joins the AEW programming roster alongside Dynamite and Rampage 2022 in parentheses, and also listed Double or Nothing for November 28th. And a lot of
What?
people,
What
yes,
is this?
this is so here, let me I'll
Is
slide this.
Rampage back? Battle of the Belts?
No, I'll clarify this for you. Let me give you the original so you can see this without me. Yeah, people can't see this. I'm going to put it in the chat.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, no AI companion need for
I hope
this.
there's
There you go.
emojis. Okay, press.
actually clear if I get this. So yeah, so this came out, and of course, it wasn't like that widely reported on at the time. And then a couple of days later, I think Post might have been the first people to note this. And they said, oh, there's a 3-hour collision stuff I was just noting. So if you
Battle of the Belts is coming back in November.
Well, au contraire, mon frere, Battle of the
This is what
Belts
this says.
is not coming, and Double or Nothing is not for November 28th is not coming to TBS or TNT. However, people did not know. If you look at the very, very top, it's for HBO Max, not for TBS and TNT.
Oh.
So, my friend, I have learned that the Battle of the Belts, the series, the 12 episodes, are being posted on November 21st. They are currently not available on the Max service.
Okay,
And
so Barry Windham versus Ric Flair, that's all coming to Max.
no, incorrect. That's Clash of the Champions. That's on a
No,
separate stream.
Battle of the Belts, the original Battle of the Belts in 1986. Come on.
Oh, well, look
A
at you going old
five-star
school
match
on
rated by the Observer at the time, I
well, I mean,
believe.
listen, I don't want to get any star ratings and get people upset. But I'll defer to you on that. But yeah, so the actual Battle of the Belts series was not, I didn't realize it because I think because no one really cared about too much about it. It was not on the Max archive. So that's going up on the 21st. I believe all 12. I'm working to get an answer. Perhaps as we talk, I'll get a reply to my inquiry. And Double or Nothing is actually going up on the service on the 28th. It's not airing on TBS or TNT as some had previously thought. The reason for that is if you remember when AEW announced a pay-per-view availability, and this was earlier in the year, they said they would go up 6 months after the pay-per-view aired, being exclusive for people that actually bought the pay-per-view during that time frame. So November 28th is 187 days after May 25th. That falls in line with policy. And there you go.
Okay.
Huge breaking
And
news.
this is WB that's clarifying this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they're pretty good about answering questions.
Yep. I'm sure they're like, and again, I think sometimes people forget that they're writing these releases. A lot of these people don't understand wrestling, or, just like we, if they were listing stuff about tennis and there was something in there and we were in charge or whatever, we may not realize it. And someone may say, oh, what about this or this or this? It's just a clarity thing. They just didn't understand. So, yeah, I asked, I said, I think this, because I think some people assumed it was just a copy and paste from an old press release they didn't take out, because obviously Rampage and Battle of the Belts doesn't exist anymore. So it
Yeah.
said the way it's worded that joins the AEW programming roster, it's worded kind of awkwardly, right? So it means it's just being added to the archives,
Library.
added to the
Yeah.
library,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so people want to plan ahead as far as when AEW pay-per-views, if they did not buy them on Max but still want to watch them. It's 6 months after they air, so you can figure out the dates for All In, Forbidden Door, and the like. And yeah, in 6 months. I was thinking about this a few minutes ago before we were talking. That 6 month window seems a little long. May seems like a very long time ago. I would maybe go 3 months. I'm not sure why six is it, but
You've got to
just
protect that value. That's a $20 million your business. You have to protect that and the exclusivity and the live broadcast. They're charging people $50 a pop for those pay-per-views. I guess they want to.
True.
That's the window that they want.
True. Still, that's a long time.
I guess you don't want people to think, well, I'll wait 3 months. Maybe I can wait 3 months, but maybe not six. I don't know.
Yeah,
but maybe the way that content is being consumed so quickly, and maybe the exponential value of live does justify the window being smaller. I don't know.
Perhaps. So let's actually get to Q3 talk. And those, of course, are the major headline. But the big headlines, we'll split this up. And again, for those that are listening for the first time, this is our look back at AEW Business and for the third quarter. And again, this is based on just information we know, some stats that Brandon has. We'll talk about those in a few minutes and some of the interesting things. No storyline details here. But the big headlines, AEW held 3 pay-per-views during this period, all at earlier start times. All In, Forbidden Door, and All Out, all starting at earlier start times. WWE counter-programming was continuing, with All In, both NXT and WWE events happening that day. With a Great American Bash going really head to head with the pay per view, and also Saturday night's main event later on. We had Forbidden Door getting a heads up with an NXT show, another NXT show. And then, of course, the day we'll always remember, September 20th, WrestlePalooza on ESPN domestically taking on All Out. And All Out was moved to 3 o'clock in kind of a hidden in the announcement of HBO Max finally carrying pay-per-views. So that was kind of buried in there a little bit. We had HBO finally launching pay-per-view availability on Max at a discount. That discount getting a little bit smaller with the HBO Max price increase announcement this past week. They also launched a brand new property, the Tailgate Brawl pre-show, available exclusively on Max or TNT. And not for people on YouTube or anything like that that have been watching the buy-in shows or anything like that. Dynamite celebrated its 300th episode. Collision celebrating its 100th episode. AEW headed to Australia for Grand Slam in February and Sydney. And on also this is the announcement. They're heading to Australia for Grand Slam in February 2026 in Sydney, Australia. Brand new city for them. A house show, House Rules, the next day in Brisbane, going back to the Brisbane Entertainment Center, where they ran the Grand Slam show earlier this year. We also learned that AEW has a 5-year deal to run Australia events through 2029. The company is heading to the United Kingdom. We've always talked about wanting to go international.
Did they mention any tourism board in that announcement?
Which announcement?
Going to Australia for 5 years through 2029.
So they actually did not make that announcement. This was revealed by a podcaster, an Australian podcaster. I'd have to give you the link after that was talking about it. And he had talked, I believe it was to Ticket Tech and somebody else. And that was, I don't know if it's similar to the WWE one with Perth. The
news was revealed on a recent episode of, well, I don't know if I'm recent, but on an episode of Wrestle Radio Australia.
Yes. Yes. That's how one of the hosts was talking about. It's a very short clip.
The hosts of the show noted that AEW had signed a 5-year deal with TEG Sport last year.
Yes. That's what it was.
Okay. So that's a live event business.
Yeah, it is. Probably. It is.
Okay, so it's not a tourism board that has access to government funds.
Unfortunately, not one you can submit a FOIA to. Actually, you can't really do FOIAs in different countries, I guess, right?
You can. Oh, you can. You yeah. can. And you might get some attitude for it, but you can do it.
That's all right.
You might have to find a friend in that country, maybe even. Yeah.
You have friends everywhere, being as popular as you are. Yes, yes. AEW heading to UK, as I was mentioning, for 2 December shows, Cardiff and Manchester coming up in December. And then the rumors of a WBD sale started to begin again. They actually kicked up in earnest this past week, of course, but during this 3-month period, the rumors began. What stood out to you about any of those?
We have to think back to things we've said previously on this series of podcasts, I think. And I think you raised the idea that, you know, when is this HBO Max pay-per-view going to finally happen? Maybe it doesn't even happen in the whole course of this deal. And I said, I'm cynical enough to go along with that. Mm-hmm. And no, they proved us all wrong. HBO Max, David Zaslav and the rest, they got it done.
They got
it. It took a year. They got it done.
Yeah, that was that. Anything else stand out to you, or is that the only thing?
They're doing more international shows, which they should. I'm definitely in favor of the early start times. I'm surprised that they could have done Wrestle Dream outside of this quarter. Most recently at an earlier start time. I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah, I would agree with that, being an East Coast viewer. And I read something once that the 85% of the population of North America lives in the Eastern and Central time zones.
And 85%?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait, Eastern and Central.
Eastern oh, and yeah, Central yeah. time zones combined, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
So they still go so, they go so late. This is always my complaint about UFC shows and why I eventually get out of those. Like, I don't really be one watching stuff at 1 or 2 in the morning. You know what I mean? Stuff that I'm supposed to be entertained by. It's a chore. If you're older, you get family, kids, stuff to do. I mean, it is asking a lot.
And you have a significant European audience.
Yeah.
Who are going to have to stay up, start watching the show at midnight or something.
Yeah, it has been in the UFC world. That has been a complaint for decades. It's in the middle of the night. It's why they don't get big TV rights deals, because these shows are over there for the most part, because they're airing at like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. And then when UFC would run shows over there, they're starting to do this less and less now. But when they're running shows over there, they're running pay-per-views for our audience, the domestic audience. And so, in Australia, shows would start like 6 or 7 in the morning, and they would just have, full house in Australia to go to shows, or they'd be up in the middle of the night going in shows like main event going in at like 6 a.m. or something like that. Like, it is just, it's crazy. So yeah, I'm surprised they don't. I guess it'll be, so far they have not bumped up the final two. I don't think that they will at this point. They could, but I don't think they will for Full Gear or World's End. It'd be great if they did. One's in Newark and one is in Chicago. And
I'm throwing my hands up on ever hoping that these shows get shorter.
Right.
I don't want to, I know that's controversial to even suggest, I think, at this point, because right. they're so good. And the fans who love these shows love them so much. They're fine with them being 6 hours long.
Yes. That's what some say. I would say that's not everyone. I would make the argument. I'll probably do it later this week, that as someone that has watched probably 85% of all AEW programming, that there's some stuff you could just easily put on Dynamite.
Are you including Darks in that percentage?
Oh yeah. Dark and Dark Elevation.
You're watching all the Darks.
I used to. Yeah. I used to. And then it was like, oh my God, why am I watching?
But then you went to rehab.
That's that's true. Too much content. That's what they said. Let's see. Yeah. WBD sale. I mean, it's tough to really like speculate on this in terms of like what it's gonna mean. AEW has a contract for another couple of years. I say they're fine. Who knows?
What does this mean for AEW?
I know. But it is, there is, if you listen to, you guys talked about Paul Thurston. I've listened to it on, there was a good talk on The Town that I listened to, which is part of the Ringer Podcast Network. They were talking about as well. One of the issues is WD is so much debt that a company is going to have to take on. It's just a question of, this is going to be like a $65 billion deal, potentially. There's only 1, 2, maybe 3 companies that would do this. Why would they do it? Do they want the broadcast entities? It's not like one of these quick things, like of course someone would take it. Yeah, there's a lot of great IP and all that, but there's just the amount of debt and just the amount of money. That's it's a lot to ask. So it's going to happen anytime soon.
Who knows? I mean, when there was news about the Paramount bid, which was a month or so ago, I was hauled into some places to explain what this means for AEW. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, look, there should be some antitrust concern here, mm-hmm. I think. TKO has deals with almost every major media company, with the exceptions of Fox and Amazon, I suppose. But let's not forget about Tubi and Evolve, which is Fox. But as far as major media deals, it's got all of them now, with the addition of Paramount. Now, I don't know that those are exclusive deals, or that TKO has the direct ability to influence their media partners and dissuade them from making a deal or negotiating a deal with AEW. But if they did, I mean, this would seem like something that would be contributive to a case for a civil antitrust suit if it came to it. That's something I think AEW should be aware of and probably is. I don't know. But I think they'll probably be okay as long as it continues to be a really highly ranked show, as long as the ratings hold up. Big Data Plus Panel was at the end of this quarter. I don't know if we'll get to that today, but
yeah,
that's happening.
We may mention it. It's been talked about a lot. I will say one thing with this, though, and I think I may have mentioned this before in our talks. When sports entities, when they eventually find their home, you always hear stories afterwards about who else was bidding. It's usually just a thing of like, you know, for F1 or for MLB package or NBA, something like this. You know who the major players are because they want to be known that they're going for it. In this case, there wasn't. When they re-signed with WBD, I never heard. There was no, in any of the, you know, Variety or any of these other things that picked the story up, there was never anything like X was interested in this or they were talking around, even just a name in there. There was nothing. And I found that, like, I just kind of checked that off in the back in my head of like, huh. I just wonder how many entities were that interested in it. They probably should have been given the archives, given, again, the audience and stuff we've talked about. But I just found that I don't know if they really went out and shopped it around. I don't know if maybe some of the things we talked about, potential antitrust and with WB having all these different, you know, networks covered, if that had something to do with it. I don't know. I just found it interesting that we don't know anyone else that they talked to and nothing else has leaked out about it.
I mean, that could be a PR issue as much as anything else. I mean, I look to like the relationships that WWE has with all these media outlets and Nick Khan's deep involvement with CAA and everything that's all of the media rights negotiations that happened with that. I wonder if that contributes to more conversations about who's bidding for what and AEW conversely having a lack of any of that. But no, I don't know. Like, what do you make of the Fox? Where's AEW Shockwave? Did you know that the NWA put up a trademark challenge to that?
No, I did not.
Lightning One has entered the ring. But anyway, but I'm sure that's not what's standing in the way of that being a TV show with Fox. I'm sure that has very little, if anything, to do with it. Oh. But I mean, there were rumors that there would be a show on Fox.
Swerve Strickland said it. Yeah.
Does that mean that Fox is interested in other rights? I don't know.
Perhaps. We'll see. They also, of course, they have their own streaming service now. So who knows what will happen in the future. The medium headlines, Jazzwares. I don't know if you're into wrestling figures. I am not, but a lot of people are, probably people in our audience. I'm sorry, my set does not have a lot of figures in back of it. Numbers and those financial figures. That's what we're interested in, right? Jazzwares figure deal. We learned through Matt Cardona, of all people. He went straight to the source and asked, and their figure deal is running through 2026. After that, not sure. There's a story that came out, or some rumors of potentially they were done. And they don't really seem to advertise figures or anything on TV. And it's such a big market. You know, they haven't mentioned it. It's kind of this, and we'll get to the video games in a minute, but there's certain things that really, I think, seem to connect with really kind of bigger groups than maybe we think. And they don't really play in that space or seem that interested in playing in that space. And with the Jazzwares stuff, and figures, I mean, that's something that, you know, kids buy, and that's who you're trying to kind of bring along is kids and teenagers and collectors and all that. And I don't know. I never hear anything about it, so I just don't know how invested they are in them.
I'm looking at Walmart. I can still find on their online shop AEW action figures on Walmart and Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. There does seem to be – I can get a retro Sting figure.
Interesting. But I never see like
I can get a 6-inch Sean Spears articulated action figure with a folding chair and soft PVC hood.
Wow. I mean, that's a collector's item because obviously he is with a different organization as of now.
Yeah. Don't say who they are. Thank you.
That people, watch things like that. Mercedes Moné and AEW announced a Crunchyroll exclusive merch line. And again, that goes to a different audience. Didn't hear much about that afterward. I don't even know if she wore any gear or anything like that. So really don't know much about that. But that, I mean, that WWE does that a lot. Did that line with Travis Scott, and then he decided to bail. Whatever happened between him and WWE. So these things do kind of come up and don't really make that big of a ripple. AEW and the United Soccer League announced a merch launch. And United Soccer League is kind of a small soccer league here in the States, I believe. And Pittsburgh has a team, and maybe a couple other ones. So not that big. And again, not really aligned with anything that the cons have. They have a very big interest in a soccer team, but they haven't really announced anything other than the women's team. And I think we talked about that last time. This is one that I noticed, and this hasn't been announced, but I don't know if you know, it's that Progressive Insurance is now the main insurance presence AEW sponsor, as opposed to
Uh-oh.
State Farm, who was there forever. And I was wondering if it was a, I don't know if they were ever sponsoring them directly, or State Farm, the NBA, were pretty lockstep. And I don't know if maybe that was bigger, kind of a, oh, not an ad share isn't the right term, but you know what I mean? Kind of a.
Part of the deal. Well, you're making the deal primarily with NBA. Maybe we're throwing in. Yeah, you'll be great with AEW too.
MLB, some of the other entities they have. But yeah, Progressive Insurance, I note, is the insurance provider that's listed on AEW TV. All In, officially set to return to Wembley. They gave a date, August 30th, 2026. So get your FOIAs ready, and your insights for turnstiles and all that.
Will they put something in the contract that says do not, you cannot disclose any turnstile counts?
As long as it's bold and in all caps, we'll see that.
They really did try to put that in a contract recently.
Yes, that was the I'm blanking. Which contract was
That was
that?
the Esports Stadium is where we saw it.
Yes. I would say, I mean, are we getting to a point where Tony is going to say in a media call to you, Jack Nicholson style, you can't handle the truth? Is he going to say that at some point?
I don't know if he's going to say anything, to be honest.
Maybe not. I haven't heard your voice on there in quite some time.
My hand is up.
Yeah. I'm always waiting. Always waiting. AEW getting 2.1 million tax credits from Ohio. That was up from
Yes.
the previous period, which I believe is 1.3 or something
I
along those
love
lines.
tax credits. It's probably related to the amount of money that they're spending, so probably driven by the number of events that they did.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's weird because it was like the other one was like 2024, 2025. This was 2025, 2026. I don't know if it's how they do their fiscal year or the state of Ohio or something like that, with how they work that out. But WWE also gets tax credits as well. And there's some other random, a lot of film projects and so on
AEW
and
got
so
a
forth.
bigger tax credit than WWE on that occasion.
They did. Yes, they did. They did score one for the good guys, right? AEW in Philly, the union controversy. What's the rat's name again?
He was renamed Roger the Rat, after
Wasn't
the person in charge of the 2300 Arena.
Rizzo the Rat? Rizzo the Rat's a Muppet, I think.
IOTC Rat. Getting rates now.
Ring rats.
Scabby the Rat.
Scabby the Rat. Yes.
The inflatable rat, of course.
Yes. So, of course, AEW ran a residency at the 2300 Arena for the very first time. Tony Khan asked about this Philadelphia Union issue on a media call. Khan quickly said he has nothing to say on it. I mean, he interrupted the question. I believe it was from Bill of WrestleZone. And it was not like a gotcha question. He basically asked him about it because it was a notable story. I think everyone realized it was pretty
Well, they gave us
ridiculous.
a comment the night before. I believe the very next day, the call that you're talking about, and we reached out for comment to AEW when this was happening, and we got comments from Roger Argentini. Am I saying his name right? I'll look. And we got a comment from Roger Artigiani, and we got comments from the union people as well. But we did get a comment from AEW who said All Elite Wrestling has paid and will continue to pay the prevailing wages to all locals used as part of our residency at the venue and has maintained a great relationship with IATSE Local 8 for previous events held at other venues in Philadelphia. Any current demonstrations being held are between 2300 Arena and IATSE Local 8. Could have just said that.
Yeah, no, he said, I have nothing to say on it. He interrupted. That was notable. Wrestle Dream was announced for St. Louis mid-October, of course. Full gear to Newark, beautiful Newark, New Jersey, where you and I met for the very first time in person.
Oh, yes.
And then World's End heading to Chicago, Illinois at the Now Arena, home of many all-outs in the past, in December. So I will round out the schedule. We'll see if for some reason, if they decide to move back those two pay-per-views to an earlier start time, or if they just say, you know what, these shows are going to go late and you're just going to have to deal with it. And we also learned via our Brian Alvarez that Tony Khan, AEW were holding quote-unquote regular backstage production meetings. This was the story that came up. Of course, a lot of just random like production snafus and all that stuff. And I think Brian speculated on air about it. And they said, no, they're having them. And then Tony actually talked about it on a call. And then there was
the suggestion was it that they don't have these meetings?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. But he was saying Tony they started or?
Tony said that they were having them. And then
always?
I don't know about always, but he said, you know, he talks to everyone. He talks to this group and he talks to this group and this group. But however, that they were, Brian said that they were holding quote, regular backstage production meetings with everyone involved, which is how you, if anyone that's worked in production for sports events like yours truly, you have to do that or else nobody knows what's going on. You have to
have the leaks. What about information getting out?
I mean, look, brother, you got a show to put on, you know? You code them.
People will find out our finishes.
Well, I mean, you got to be careful how you write out the script. The actual script, not the script to the match. If I've heard the wrestling is allegedly scripted, but you know, this goes. And yeah, there's a whole cadence to doing this stuff as far as, especially if you're doing certain things that require cameras to be in the, looking at the right thing. You gotta have a lot of communication there. And yeah, so that was revealed during the quarter. The smaller headlines, new title belts. Everyone loves new title belts. Interim Ring of Honor TV, or women's TV title was created. The inaugural women's tag team titles were introduced. And I don't know if they do a an earnest business when it comes to belts. I know WWE obviously does. They love selling title belts, and you see them.
You can definitely get a replica AEW world title.
Yeah. What about the other ones?
I don't know about the other ones. Mm.
Title Tuesday returned for some reason. Not so Title Tuesday. I think there was one title match on that show. And they continue to do this head-to-head. I thought it was so odd. Title Tuesday. I thought they were running Wednesday live for Collision. I actually taped on Wednesday, then ran on Saturday. The whole Title Tuesday thing is just the whole NXT head-to-head versus AEW on Tuesday just doesn't seem as interesting anymore when, you know, it just doesn't.
Well, when one's preempted, it sort of disadvantages the one that's preempted.
Yeah.
You can get a women's title replica belt, a TBS championship replica belt. You can get an AEW Dynamite Diamond Ring replica for $150. The main title, TNT, and the tag title.
Maybe we should buy our significant others AEW Dynamite rings for the holidays. It sounds a little bit cheaper than like a regular diamond based on what I've seen out there.
Yes, and that's roughly two paychecks for me anyway. you can also, for $25, you can get a replica title belt extender if you need one.
Some people are, you know, they go to the gym, they lift, and you know, some people need that. No shame there.
Lifting, yeah.
That's right, brother. That's right. And again, I always follow the rule that if you are carrying around a title belt at any point, you have to be ready to defend it, no matter where you are.
It's always a 24/7 title.
Yep. Yep, indie shows.
It's a great way to start fights if you ever go to a wrestling event.
Okay, that's, you know, whatever it takes to get people in the seats, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. New IP, September to Remember, new trademark, and new three-hour show. I kind of like this, that they're actually combining Dynamite and Collision during some pay-per-view weeks instead of, you know, get 3 hours instead of four. I guess you get four technically with the tailgate brawl. Blood and Guts, official for November, may feature two Blood and Guts matches, the women getting involved for the very first time. So everyone can hide their kids. Like Sarah Stock.
More is always better, yes.
Yep. Sarah Stock doesn't want the kids to be watching the violence, you know, so stay away.
What if this would be great? Bring Sarah Stock back to do a run-in on that match.
That would be great. Have her be she could be a referee because I believe it's a pinfall. Have her just pop up and yeah, that maybe this is just a long con angle for this.
Yeah.
K-H-A-N. Yeah. Ring of Honor, Death Force Honor, the saga continued. It was moved for a second time. And the date was moved back to a week in Philadelphia. We learned later due to MJF's wedding, making him the most powerful person in wrestling. And then streaming issues. And actually, I think we may have talked about this last time. Maybe I talked about someone else. Streaming issues with their hosting provider, I think it was Bright Cove, made them have to put it on YouTube for free. And I think they should do that with all these ROH shows, because we still don't know just, any.
It should all be free.
It should all be on YouTube. All of it. Yep. There's no. I mean, look. So we talked before. The only number he had ever given out was, I think, 12,000 or 15,000 subscribers. And I think that was almost 2 years ago when he did that. I find it hard to believe. Yeah. There's
price
that
point. $10.
$10 a month.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe it, that is profitable endeavor.
It's $1.4 million before. I mean, I don't think you're going to take your expenses down by going on YouTube. It's $1.4 million a year if you had 12,000 subscribers sustained year round at $10 a month.
Oh, hosting expenses, any streaming expenses, wherever they're paying to Bright Cove and others. I mean, there's.
I suppose. You wouldn't have to. If you were just saying, let's put it all on YouTube, you wouldn't be paying Bright Cove. And
Right. So that's the thing. I just think you get way more people watching it. I find it hard to believe that many people are still paying $10 a month.
I would assume
for more
down.
Content. Yeah. So I think they should put them all on YouTube. Why not? Ring of Honor Final Battle. They gave a location, Galaxy Con in Columbus, Ohio. And of course, mentioned those Ohio tax credits. And then the Philly residency concluded. And that seems to be the last one of the year. They did Chicago. Chicago, I think, was after this, getting my dates mixed up. Live separate ticketed events, as we get ready to talk about some attendance and so on and so forth. We had 13 Dynamites, 11 Collisions, 3 pay-per-views, and then we had ROH Supercard of Honor in Arlington and Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor in Philadelphia. We had 1 combo taping, so we did not see a lot of those. Next time we talk, Brand, there will be more, quite more, when it comes to these combo Dynamite and Collision tapings. 3 pay-per-views, again, all in from Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. Estimated 180,000 to 185,000 pay-per-view buys. Over $3 million live gate has been reported. $1.2 million in merch. And a good portion of that was actually from Starrcade, as we learned. So we actually got real numbers there. The actual attendance, I don't know what rabble-rouser is revealing these numbers. But the actual attendance, the turnstile people that are scanned in, 23,759. Distributed according to WrestleTix, the estimated was 29,000. And then Coldplay was the group that prevented their return to Wembley. So, yeah, we heard about this. Of course, that attendance, Brandon, is, as you very well know, because you actually reported this story, the attendance was lesser than they actually thought, which means they got less of a tax credit back from the Texas Commission, whatever it's called, because they estimated that, right?
There is no Texas Commission.
Oh, that's true. What are they again?
Texas. So this is the event, as everyone knows, this is the event trust fund program.
Yes.
Trust fund babies.
Yes. Everyone's been saying Tony Khan is a trust fund baby. And look at this. Texas trust fund.
So this is a program that WWE has used a number of times. Thankfully, there is no Texas Athletic Commission governing professional wrestling in Texas, as far as I know. What happened was you have to apply for this program in advance, and you present all this information to the government, that the economic tourism division, and you say, this is how many people we're going to draw from outside of the area and from outside of the state. And that's because they're coming from outside of the area. That's going to lead to all this incremental tax revenue from all the hotels that they have to stay in, from all the food that they're going to buy and everything else. So you make this whole big presentation and you say, okay, we're going to have, I believe their number was 35,000 people who are going to attend this event. They had less than 35,000 people attend the event. I think should tell you that this was not the attendance that they expected, that this was a lower attendance than AEW, at least. Yeah, it was a lower attendance than they told the government that they were going to draw. They were approved for just over $1 million in reimbursements, but because the actual attendance that they submitted, which they had to submit some documentation to justify, to support what their actual attendance was, because it was 25% lower than their earlier projected attendance, they're going to end up getting a little less than $1 million. If it's down, I don't know how much yet. They haven't been paid out yet. But if it's down proportionally from $1 million, it'll look like $700,000, which is That's a good amount of money. That's more money than I have in my pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. So $3 million live gate. They had the merch money, the taxes, we just mentioned with the refund there, whatever it will officially turn out to be. Do we think this is a profitable show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Pay-per-view, I think.
Oh, because the pay-per-view as well. Correct.
Puts just about any event where they're doing well over 100,000 pay-per-view buys. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is all
split. Yeah.
Yeah. Estimated between 180,000 and 185,000. So yeah, I wonder, because the attendance 23, just under 24,000 in the building. Again, that does not include actual sold tickets. Cause again, some of us will buy tickets. They can't show up for whatever reason, comps, things like that. So you're always going to have, you're never going to have 100% attendance. Very, very rare. Maybe a Taylor Swift concert, but even then I'm going to guarantee there's some people that buy tickets and they can't actually make it, or for whatever reason, but they're actually sold, so they count. I just wonder about stadium shows in the future. And I think we're going to see this with All In next year and so on.
Yeah.
How do they have it so as the most, is it still worth it for them to do that? Could they still have drawn 185,000 on pay-per-view without it, the live gate and so on? How do they get kind of the best of the best of both worlds? Or do they just say, it's worth it for us, we'll dress it up, and it's important to have a WrestleMania style presentation at least once a year?
You mean be in a stadium?
Yeah, because again, your people are thinking, you look at the other side, and WWE doesn't have these issues filling a stadium for the most part. At least that they have the 50,000 attendance and so on and so forth. That's who you're comparing against. Are they? I wonder if they're okay being, we'll take 24,000 in a stadium all day if we can.
I think this was fine. I think Globe Life Field as it was. I mean, this is not an NFL stadium. It's a Major League Baseball stadium. So there wasn't as much empty room as there could have been if this was Wembley Stadium. But I think it's clearly diminishing returns, right? From the 80,000, 81,131 sold that they had for the first one, and some 50 something, or maybe I know the turnstile on that one was in the 40,000s. To now, I know this is not, I mean, if anything, this should have drawn better because people had less of the bulk of the audience had less of a distance to travel, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're going to have them travel back out to the UK. Yes, there are plenty of people in Europe, but bigger audience in US and Canada, I think. You want them to travel to the UK for the third All in Wembley Stadium. I would be shocked. You'd have to have some big attraction or some, I mean, Sting's retirement was big. If you have an attraction like that, I don't know what that would be though.
Yeah.
Maybe you can come close to a previous number, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah. I'm curious about this. I just think about, cause as someone that watches the product and it follows along with it every week, this was probably the best card they could have done. And they were able to get, just under, depending whatever the sold number was, but yeah, it's surprising. It was less than, maybe that's just their max, no pun intended. Right. And maybe that's just kind of where it is. And I want to talk about the attendance in just a minute and so on, but you look at Forbidden Door from the O2 Arena, just under 19,000 announced attendance. So 18,992 was the largest pro wrestling show that was announced for the O2 Arena. Estimated pay-per-view buys between 122 and 130,000. It was the third largest non-WWE gate in history. I asked Dave Meltzer the other day if he got an actual updated number on that. And he said he did not have the actual number on that.
Third largest non-WWE gate worldwide?
That's a good question.
There's going to be some big Tokyo Dome shows.
Yeah, I will have to get clarity on. Now you mentioned that, of course, I will. I'll figure that out. But yeah, I had actually looked this up, and it said third largest. Yeah, that was what Dave had. That's what Dave is already the third largest non-WWE game pro wrestling history. That seems to be a very large number.
So I wrote an article in April 2025 called WrestleMania and Highest Gates in Pro Wrestling History, which puts, let's see when I get to something that's not. Well, what I have on here is Collision Korea, but let's sort of discount that. The 1998 Inoki show, now this is adjusting for inflation, at the time was $7 million, and adjusts, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, at the time was $7 million, but adjusts up to 13.7 in today's money.
I mean,
I guess so, forget inflation. Inoki's retirement in 98 does $7 million. Does this show do $7 million?
I don't think so. I'm going to ask him for clarity on that. Yeah. That's because, yeah,
we could go on from there. We could go do the 10/9/95 Tokyo Dome show, 6.1. There's a number of new Japan Tokyo Dome shows that did over $5 million in the 90s and so forth. Yeah.
All right. I'll get some clarity on that. Yeah. All Out from Toronto did just over 12,000 in attendance at the beautiful Scotiabank Arena, 135,000 to 140,000. Estimated buys, no gate has been revealed for that. And Supercard of Honor in Arlington did between 1,300 and 1,500 in attendance. I've seen different numbers there. And then Death Before Dishonor in Philly sold out with a whopping 916. Of course, no gates revealed for those two. Total TV broadcast for the quarter, 26. We had 13 Dynamites, 12 Collisions, and one Tailgate Brawl. Of course, that happened in September. Total linear TV hours, 52. Of course,
tonnage.
That counts commercials. While we kick it over to you, let's go through this PDF, which you can get exclusively at WrestleNomics.com. You can subscribe there on Patreon at just $5 a month. You get AEW KPIs. Let's start with this first one with Dynamite Collision. And I was about to say Rampage Rankings, but RIP. Why don't we go over these and the very important way of where they rank and the 18 to 49 and so on. The floor is yours.
So remember, this ends in September. So, and I think ranking tells you a lot about what the media rights value is. And as long as the media rights values, or as long as the rankings are strong, their TV deal capacity should be pretty strong too. And we've got Dynamite, the flagship show in Q. This is in Q2. I should be showing Q3 here. In Q3, number 58 on a weekly basis. This is a weekly median in the demo. It did a 58. Compared to the prior year in Q3, a 47, so a bit down, but still in the top 60. Collision, a median rank on the week of 144, which is more significantly down from 104 in the same quarter of the prior year. So,
and down from the previous quarter.
And it is down from the previous quarter. Because
124 at the previous quarter, and then Dynamite was actually up. So that's. For Dynamite, according to your rankings, that's three straight quarters that they're up. They were as high as 47 in Q3 of 2024 and then upset the 78, then, oh, actually, no, 78, yeah. 84. So 84 is the third straight quarter they're actually up.
When you say up, it's a worse rank, though.
It's a
number one is the best.
Yep.
And then from down, from there, it's
right. But so they were 84, you said
that. I see what you're saying, though, yes.
Yeah, so there, yeah. The Dynamite has actually improved. Because you said they were
58.
So 58, and then they were 65 in Q2 of 2025. I'm just saying, going, like, yes. If you're kind of looking at the trend line, it's going up. They were 84, yes. Then 65, and then, yes. Yeah.
Okay. What I was saying in terms of being less good is that in Q3 2024, it was 47.
Correct.
Versus number 58 in this quarter. And anyway, we should mention that this is a year ago, the show wasn't on Max.
Mm, right. Correct. 2.1 million viewers on Max.
I don't know about that. I don't have that information.
I want to throw something in about Max. I was thinking about the other day. I think a lot about things on my walks. And I was, so I watched on HBO Max, great series. I just wrapped Task. Starring Mark Ruffalo and Tom Pelfrey and some other great actors. Very worth your watch, 7 hours, and very good, especially if you love Mayor of Easttown. Even if you didn't watch it, I would suggest watching it.
Yeah, I
bring it up because HBO did a release about Max viewership, or did about Task viewership, and said overall HBO platform. And they mentioned, I believe they mentioned Max in there in terms of total viewers and all that. I say that because I saw something a few months ago where they were also touting overall viewership across the board. I bring this up because when there is something that is of note that they really want to tout, they will use numbers across all the platforms to tout it. They have not done this with any AEW numbers yet. And I think about this with Grand Slam Mexico, which was seemed to be, it did really well, if I remember, on traditional. And there were some people thinking, well, it must have done, and it may have just been Dave just kind of with his numbers in his head, like thinking it could have done 1 million total viewers. I would think if that did 1 million total viewers, they would have, HBO would have put something out about it to kind of point to this, an international event or something, whatever the non-wrestling fans would think of it. And they haven't. So I'm just want to kind of point that out, that if it's a, if something is a big success, there is no reason to not do immediate release about it. And they've shown the propensity to do that. I'm just saying that, you know, not RIP AEW. I'm just saying that keep that in mind, that they would have done something if this was bigger, because they want to draw attention to it. And they have not done that yet. Maybe they should. Or maybe the numbers aren't big, strong enough for them to do that without getting, you know, looked at by, you know, other people in the industry, not wrestling industry, being like, why are you talking about this? That's not that big.
Yeah. Because we're talking about something that AEW itself could not disclose. Whatever information they're getting it from WBD. So it's WBD's decision, as all things in AEW's TV world are. If they're not talking about it, it's not blow away good news, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just something to think about when it comes up to the value and all these things.
Could be
just,
okay news.
Yeah. It doesn't mean it's bad, but it's nothing that they're going out to tell people. I also, and I've mentioned it before, I remain very skeptical. AEW does not know any information. I just have a hard time believing it. I have a hard time believing WBD would not share important information with a entity they're paying $185 million to a year. I just find that very hard to believe, because if they had information, now obviously they can't demo information on streaming services, as you know, very tough to get, because it's not like Nielsen. And if I have my account, it's taking me an account, not anyone else that may be watching with me, right? It's just demo information is a lot harder to get, I would assume, for streaming services. But if a streaming service has information that they think could bring more people into view, if it's the earlier start time thing, if it is this is where we saw people drop off or log out, something where it's like, we're seeing this, we think this might help you avoid this in the future so more people stay watching, I find it very hard to believe they're cold that close to the vest for some phantom negotiation 4 years from now or 3 years from now, where they're like, we're not going to tell you how it did, but we're going to offer you this. Well, why are you offering me this? Well, the performance was, you know, whatever, but we can't tell you what it was. I just, from a common sense standpoint, I just do not believe that for any entity. TV shows, maybe. A live sporting adjacent industry that requires week to week, I find it really hard to believe it.
So when Tony Khan is asked if he knows anything about the max viewership, and he says he doesn't, and just alludes to BJ Bethel's article.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I just don't. Fundamentally, I don't. He's an analytics guy. I just don't. I can't.
Are you saying Tony Khan's not telling the truth? Fully honest about something?
Here's what I would say. Brian Danielson, in an interview several years ago, saying he taught Cody Rhodes how to lie, and lying is this.
He
loves to lie. It's that thing that Fightful always shows. It's a very evil Brian Danielson. Like, I think about that all the time. Look, non-disclosure is the game of wrestling. You know, it's a game of shadows. You know, so
many non-disclosure agreements out there in the wrestling world. That's the new kayfabe. In fact, I think
it is.
I'm not even really kidding. Yeah,
it's something. It's something. Don't talk about it unless you have a podcast. Years and years later,
are we allowed to talk about non-disclosure agreements?
Well, of course. I mean, we're not. You're a former wrestler. I said former. You never know. You could always get back in the ring at some point. You know,
that's unlikely.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go over Q2? The key demo, 18-49.
Okay. The key demo. We had a Dynamite in Q. I put the wrong number on yours, but here in Q3, P18-49 for Dynamite was a 0.15. Oh, enjoy that, a number that high while it lasts here as we enter the era of big data. 0.15 again, this is in the max era in Q3 of 2025, down from 0.22 from a year ago in the pure traditional TV era. Collision, a 0.07 down from 0.11.
What does that tell you?
I don't know. I mean, I think Paul Fontaine made an interesting mathematical, you know, demonstration to me, which I used and drew my own conclusions from, but it suggests that, you do see, so the degree to which the demo is down is stronger than the degree to which the non-demo portion of the audience is down. So if you assume that that entire absent demo portion has just gravitated over to max, you get like 5%. 5% of the total audience by that theory watching on max. Now that doesn't necessarily account for all the people who are watching on max. I would think, you know, if I were to guess what the percentage of the total Dynamite audience watching live same day is who are watching on max, I would guess it's maybe somewhere under 10%.
Q3, total viewership.
Total viewership is 611. These sound like huge numbers. It is 611,000 viewers. I've been looking at big data numbers lately, I guess. Down from 696 from the prior year. This is Dynamite. And Collision at 315. This is excluding preemptions. 315 down from 340.
Yeah, not too far away from what Rampage finished at. 273,000 in their final year.
Right.
Yeah. It's the steps are still, you know, staircase is going down, not up, not the hockey stick, up into the right that analysts want to see. It's a little bit down, but yeah, it's of course, yeah, the inclusion of Max. It's very hard to know, but there's so much talk about we don't know about Max. I joke about joked on Paul Kantharsten about, you know, the 2 million. I joked here about the 2 million viewers that are watching on Max, and we don't know. And I keep coming back to this, and this goes to our this next sheet here. If you're watching,
take a guess. What percentage of the whole Dynamite audience live same day is watching on Max?
What percentage? I would. Twenty-five percent, maybe.
25%.
I'm thinking about, like, myself. So I
is it you?
It is me.
You're watching.
I am. Okay. I am because I figured out a way to kind of unbundle myself from cable. I'm like, this is actually going to be cheaper to do this because I also like other HBO Max programming, hashtag Maximaniac. And so I like the other stuff. So it's worth it for me. So I watch there. I'm assuming other people do. As well, it just depends on how, like,
it's down only 12%. So then for you, you say it's up. You're saying 25%, let's say, right?
Yeah.
It's down 12%. Well, that's a net gain of 12%. Because 12 plus 12, 12.5. I know.
Yeah.
It's 25. But I'm saying 10% at best, because I'm an AEW hater, clearly. but also paid by Tony Khan, allegedly.
Yes. Yep.
Depends on which one's your favorite. I'm saying 10% at best. It's down 12%. It's down.
Yeah. I wonder if there's more people like me, if the only reason they were holding on to cable or any type of streaming service like YouTube TV, which I was for a while, was just for TBS and TNT. That was the only reason I still had it. And it was like, because I figured out, I can get this here, this here, and this here. Then once they announce that, I'm like, I don't need this anymore because I can get all my sports. I have all the stuff, other spots. I don't need this anymore. So I figured, okay, I'm just going to invest in Max instead. So I wonder is there a significant audience that has done that, or people that are just like, this is the only reason I'm watching it. I just kind of wonder about that. So I could be completely off of my 20 to 25%. It could be a lot less. But I go into this in that, I think I mentioned this before, if the numbers are up, if they've gained a significant audience on Max and so on, I still cannot get over the fact that the attendance has not shown any improvement on the weekly TVs. That's the biggest red flag, and something I think about a lot, more often than I should, is why aren't more people going to shows? In a live entertainment industry where people are going to concerts, they're spending way over their skis in terms of how much they can afford for shows, and they're still doing it. They want experiences. We talk about Mark Shapiro, the experience economy, and all these type of things, right? People are going to WB shows, concerts, anything. These stands are packed, and talk about ticket revenues and so on and so forth. But for some reason, the AEW crowd does not go to shows like they used to. And I wonder, I opined on this when I was on Pollock and Thurston. I think the biggest part of it is simply where they're not giving people the shows enough that they want to go pay to see them, other than the pay-per-views, right? And the pay-per-view attendance for the most part is pretty healthy, but the weekly shows, it's just they're putting out lineups most times very late. You don't know who you're going to get, and they have a middle class problem, and it's something that you don't get in other sports where the middle class is being driven out. Teams are paying the higher end and they're paying the lower end. We're seeing this in UFC, any sport. This has been happening for years and years and years. Unions have been trying to protect this, but you have a very in AEW and even in WWE, I'm noticing a lot too. There's a big middle class, and they're just people. And there's not that thing of, I have to go see them. And I think that's a big problem with them, is they have not elevated enough to break outside the wrestling bubble, wrestling Twitter, and be like, I have to go see this in person. I have to go see this person, this team, this act. I have to experience it. And that's something I when I think about the company, I look at this attendance and they're not getting people to come out like they used to. And in your chart here, the average for the quarter was 2,500. That's down from 3,900 in 2024 and down from 4,900 in 2023. And you think with the company becoming more mature, they're bringing and have more established stars and what have you, they'd have time. This would be up, but it's down. Collision is down, averaging 1,500 people, down from 2,000 the year before. I look at that and I'm like, I don't know, man. That's just a big, big, big red economic indicator for something. Something is got to be changed, and I don't know what that is or if they can do it.
I mean, it's what any wrestling promotion always wants to do, is to make their product hotter somehow. And I don't know, you know, they need to, you know, get a star who's super hot or go all in on. I guess the sort of curing of a malaise temporarily was 2004 or so with WWE, where they just put all their eggs into John Cena and Batista. And you saw an uptick in a lot of different areas of consumer business for the next year or two. But the attendance is the cleanest metric that we have for the answer to the question that I think most people want to have answered, which is, what is the popularity of this product, this brand? I'm trying to figure out quickly, I'm doing something very dangerous in the middle of the podcast, doing spreadsheet work, where I'm trying to, like, even if we excluded, because you could say, look at these numbers and say, well, it's the residencies. They're choosing to do all these residencies at 2300 Arena and in Chicago, and that's what's dragging the number down. I don't know if I'll have an answer before the end of this podcast about, I suspect it would still be down, but we'll see.
Yeah.
You need your product to be hot. You need to, you know, just obviously you need to find a Stone Cold Steve Austin or, you know, an NWO, and then the whole thing will be hot again. Or, you know, I mean, is there a mainstream wrestling product that needs an alternative? There was in 2019.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so interesting. I think the in-ring is not the issue. It's that I have to go see this in person. And this was a quarter that had Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland, and I did not really have, I did have Omega a little bit, but it's just, I'm looking at this and Hangman Page and so on. The in-ring is not the issue, and it never has been. It is the it's the I have to go see this factor and the ability, and we talked about like the figures and the video games attracting the audience. It's like, and that I need to go see this. And I don't think that the ticket prices are that high. I never hear AEW ticket prices are too high.
No, they're flat. I just did a report on this the other day showing that W ticket prices have literally doubled the last 2 years, but AEW ticket prices are essentially flat by comparison.
Yeah, that's just one. And this is the thing what happens. And so many people, as you know, they're like, well, what does it matter? What does it matter? And it matters because the hardcores are the hardcores, and they're always going to be there no matter what industry or whatever. It's the mainstream people that the come
casual
in,
fan.
The casual fans, this elusive casual fan that come in, that help, they help kind of buoy it and make it seem bigger to other people. This is something I had the place to be, and the place to be seen is a phrase that we used to use back when I worked in hockey and we were selling out the arenas and so on. It is this, I go back to, the Savannah Bananas and this thing that they're doing, and they've created this thing where when it comes to town, it sells out like that because people know it's a hot entertainment product and it's entertaining and the kids are into it. And I think it could be a lot of factors about things, but you need those casual people to help make it seem hotter and come in, because the hardcores are not good enough. Because those hardcores, here's what happens. People move on. They start to find other things to do, especially younger people, like, maybe wrestling's not so cool anymore. I'm not going to watch this. And you need this churn of new people coming in, and eventually hook them in. So more people stick around, and then the churn isn't so bad because you're bringing in so many more new people. They're not doing that. And Tony seems very, and as you know, stubborn on the whole booking thing, and he's doing this, and it's his thing to kind of win or lose, and I can appreciate that. But I look at this and I'm like, how can you not see there's an issue here? I just don't get it.
So looking at Dynamites for the last, we can, yell at me when to stop. San Antonio Dynamite down 66% from the last. So we're at the point now where, AEW's been around for years and we've got comparisons. This is not the first time Dynamite has happened in this city, right? Mm-hmm. San Antonio's down 66%. Independence, Missouri was down 34%. Jacksonville was up 34%, which is probably where, certainly given the pandemic is where the most Dynamites have happened. Pittsburgh down 37%. Cincinnati down 10%. Cleveland down 17%. Garland, Texas down 50%. Ontario, California up 47%. We get into Mexico and Kent, Washington that have no comps. Portland, Oregon down 26%. El Paso down 13%. Hoffman Estates up 33% from the last time they Dynamite there. Detroit down 59%. I think that's got a comp of a Blood and Guts or something. Norfolk, Virginia up 21%. New Orleans up 3%. Boston down 67%. Mm. Baltimore down 36%. We could keep going. It's mostly negative.
Yeah. Boston, they ran. Yeah, because they ran. I was at those shows. They ran. So it was Blood and Guts the year before in July 2024, and then this year it was at the MGA Grand, which was smaller concert hall type thing. But yeah, I would just say for those thinking about the future of it, and that's the thing I would kind of circle around and be like, that's a big indicator.
But isn't it just what about this? Isn't it just the local marketing? They need to do more commercials and more local news spots and more local promotion. That'll solve the problem, right?
Yeah, always. Yeah. I did hear someone told me that they had local promotion. Big Bill was doing local promotion in one of the towns and he wasn't even on the show.
Oh.
Which doesn't really make a lot of sense. But I think getting on that grind is they gotta do something. And I just starts with it's building up and really focusing on a few key people and not having it be an ensemble. You know, you always have to have the lead dogs, and they really need
to. How many?
I think you have to 5 to 6 acts.
5 to 6?
Yep. If you do it for two shows like this, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
I would go lower than that. Maybe 1 or 2.
1 or 2?
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, look at WWE. It's Cody, CM Punk, Roman Reigns, John Cena, the Usos, you know, just feel like that really kind of have this whole like thing.
Look at the history of most wrestling promotions is one huge star emerged and that boosted business, whether it was Hogan, whether it was Okada, whether it was Cena and Batista, one or two, Steve Austin, and eventually The Rock came too.
It's the fact that they don't seem to have an upper level of star of like they do, but they get brought down to the other ones and they're not bringing enough people up. You have to have clear, distinct lines, you know, and they don't have a clear, like, here's five or six that are the world title contenders, just them, and they're not screwing around with anything else. I don't know. I think about this a lot. We talked about pay-per-view buys. Was there anything there that we didn't mention earlier?
For pay-per-view buys, they're on track to be about the same. So despite, hold on.
Brandon is talking to someone off camera. I can't confirm if it's Tony Khan or some sort of insider, but
the police who are questioning me about the non-disclosure agreements have gone away.
Oh, good. Good.
Okay. Pay-per-view though, let's take a look. Pay-per-view through All Out, they're at about the same level that they were at a year ago, right? According to the reports of pay-per-view buys from the Observer. We got Wrestle Dream, Full Gear, and World's End yet unaccounted for, but they're like right on par. Yep. And I mean, this is a continuing trend that you have the product that I think has the most hardcore audience, people who are paying $50 for a show. I mean, that hasn't deteriorated much, but attendance, the things that are the more mass consumption products have.
Yep. Not everyone's paying $50 though. Our friends overseas.
Are you sure? Whoa.
Well, I mean, Triller pay-per-view is $25.
Is it? I heard it was 20 or something. I could be wrong. Maybe discount if you're an AEW Plus subscriber or something like that.
Yes, you do get it. You do get a discount. I can say that as someone that travels overseas, wink, wink, quite a bit, put it that way. And that's a day there. You can get that.
That's how Stephanie watches her AEW pay-per-views.
Well, I mean, she's the one. She texted me and told me. And I said, oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, Steph. Hall of Famer. All right, those KPIs, you can get those at WrestleNomics.com. Let's round up with some contracts, some signings, talking about big stars coming in. Alex Windsor, Tekla, Ace Austin, who finally got a match after he debuted in August and finally got a return match this past week. It's almost late October. It took him that long to get back in the ring. Very, very strange. Nathan Cruz was hired as a backstage agent and coach. He is a UK product. Re-signings. Ian Riccaboni, Dustin Rhodes for 6 years. Kevin Von Erich, I believe some sort of...
A six-year deal, or he's been with the company for 6 years?
A six-year deal.
A six-year deal?
Yes.
Is he going to be a wrestler for all six of those years?
We'll see about that.
Okay.
We'll see about that. Kevin Von Erich, I believe, signed a very similar Sting-type deal. Hechicero, apparently a dual deal with CMLL, as was speculated. Goats of Agony. Oh my God. The Gates of Agony. Goats of Agony would be a better act. Certainly must see. Kyle Fletcher re-upped. Matt Menard. Kota Ibushi. Hook. And then Jim Ross. And Jim Ross will assume likely end his career in AEW. But he said he was very happy. I think they're using him at a good pace, considering his medical status and all that as well. So he's coming out some pay-per-views and things like that. So he deserves whatever he can get. Departures, Keir Hogan departed the company. I think we'll probably see a lot of these similar mid to small level departures over the next year or so. If you look kind of the rosters, a lot of people have not been used in quite some time. Some returns, Scorpio Sky, Jim Ross, Juice Robinson, The Gun Club, Harley Cameron, Orange Cassidy, Pac, Adam Copeland, another guy who should be around, but he's filming stuff. Samoa Joe returned, Mina Shirakawa, Jamie Hayter, Wardlow, Rio, Commander, Dalton Castle, Eddie Kingston, Luchasaurus, and Jack Perry. And then we had injuries. Adam Cole, out. Will Ospreay, out. Swerve Strickland, out. Red Velvet, out. Dustin Rhodes signed the deal, out. Double knee replacement. Buddy Matthews hurting his ankle back at Grand Slam Australia and still did not get better. Ankle surgery there. Hologram. And then Wardlow, as quickly as he came back, he was injured the same night. So, yeah, you lose a few, obviously, main eventers and Ospreay and Strickland. Strickland hopefully be back in the winter from what Pfeiffer report. Adam Cole, who knows? But, you know, it's tough to have your top guys come back. You didn't really have a lot of top people come back. Adam Copeland. And this is another thing, too, is they have this timing of these guys that take off time for projects. And it's always the upper tier. Copeland's gone filming something. MJF is filming something. You have Ospreay gone. Omega didn't wrestle at the last pay-per-view. Like, the top people, I mean, I think he's kind of really going to be a little bit more strict with some of these schedules. Like, you can't have everyone gone at once. I know the injuries you can't avoid, but it's sometimes it's like, we need you. Come back.
There are, when, you know, observing AEW's business like this, we don't know the numbers, or not many of them. Whenever we talk about like companies, especially in the US, that are, you know, like NWA or MLW or WOW, remember WOW? Still going, I think.
Sure they do.
I don't know how those companies are profitable. I doubt that they are. And I view it as kind of consumption. Yeah, Billy Corgan, really rich guy, probably. This is something that he loves, pro wrestling. It's hard not to look at aspects of this business, despite it having a strong TV deal now that will probably bring it to profitability, and not to look at some of this as consumption. This is not completely it doesn't look completely like somebody operating a business as much as consuming things like a customer.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. It's the love child. You remember the Ring of Honor and New Japan Global War shows?
Yes.
It's like the love child of that as a promotion. That's really what it is, you know, at a much bigger scale. And it's great as it exists. Said that before, but again, you just see it and
it's great.
We want it to exist we want it to exist at a level that's going to be around for some time to come. And that's going to be better for everyone involved. Debuts, Isla Dawn, Josh Matthews, Colton Gunn, Siri, Oro Mensa, El Clone, and then Beth Copeland, former Beth Phoenix. Most of those, I don't think, actually signed a contract, but they just made appearances and Ring of Honor types and all that. Beth Copeland, that'd be someone I think would be good to get, back in the ring. I think that'd be a nice boost for them, but she got taken out by the dastardly FTR. So we'll see when she comes back.
Would she have her name changed to Foe?
To Foe. Oh, I see. For Phoenix. Yeah. That'd be good. Yeah. It could be. I mean, you should trademark that now just in case. Because they're going to get into trademarks. All Elite Feast, which is a White Castle deal. Have you ever been to a White Castle?
No.
I have not either. Tiny Burgers.
Those are on the West Coast, right?
I think they don't have many in the East Coast. We don't allow them here. But I think it's a Midwest, West Coast, I think.
I have seen the White Castle of Fear, though. I've been there.
The White Castle of Fear. Tell me about that.
It's a great moment in professional wrestling.
Oh, is it a WCW thing?
You don't know what the listeners are losing their minds right now.
White Castle.
You don't know what the White Castle of Fear is. No, shame on you.
No, I don't. White Castle of Fear.
He doesn't know about the White Castle of Fear with Vader.
Yes. This is what I was thinking about. Yes. Yes. With Vader and Super Bowl. Yes, I do know about this.
I think that they should. I don't think they would be violating anyone's intellectual property here if they reprised. Paid tribute to and transformatively paid tribute to the White Castle of Fear.
Man, so great. It was a big meal deal, the All Elite Feast. If you got that, let us know. Hit us up on
it looks like media. There are White Castles throughout the Detroit area, and there are some around the tri-state area.
Yeah. No sponsor activation in terms of on TV. I didn't see any mention of this or anything.
No. Right. And any update on the indicted
drink. Well, I mean, look, I have not I've ceased my my pursuing of this. I just noticed that I drink is on a lot for collision on the middle buckles, and yeah, I don't think that 3.3 million or whatever,
but it's still being sponsored, still being advertised.
Yes, it still is. It still is. To what end financially, I don't know. Fairway to Hell was trademarked in 2024. Tony Khan said his idea is a golf tourney to raise money and also have a dynamite the next day. We still have not seen that happen. So something may happen in the future. September, remember, as I mentioned, Ricochet trademarked the word bald. I mean, I think we have some claims on that with our hairstyles.
Yeah, I might have to file a challenge to that.
Yeah. And also AEW Bacon Brawl and Bacon Brawl, which we have not seen the reveal of that. I cannot wait, though, as a fan of bacon myself, turkey and otherwise.
All right.
Quotable quotes. Tony Khan said his third show, quote unquote, something to consider. One of the phrases he uses a lot. MJF, this is the most professional online Tony Khan has ever been.
Very true.
Tony Khan, very open to bringing back Dark.
He's open to all of it. It's all great. It's all something to consider.
Yep.
As long as there's no definitive answer, everything is great. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He said the best decision since starting AEW was sticking with AEW. That does not right. Sticking with WBD. That's what I meant. So his best decision since starting the company was sticking with WBD. He was asked about things he's learned and not learned. He usually doesn't answer his questions. His biggest regret was Jay Briscoe not being shown on AEW TV. That's his biggest regret. On social media Saturday, not this Saturday, but during this period, a person wrote to Tony Khan writing, WWE is going to bring you down and close shop. Can't wait. Tony Khan replied with a gif of Patrick Stewart of Star Trek fame with a short reply, that will be the day.
Is that a line from Star Trek or something?
Yes, I cannot tell. I think it's a notable line, but he enjoys using the GIFs and memes and things like that. So we replied back with that. Tony Khan said, I would love to have Chris Jericho back in AEW Ring of Honor. I include this in here because he's been asked about this a lot because Jericho has been out for quite some time, I believe since April. And it's clear he's not coming back. I mean, it's possible, but when he was at All In, that was a big, big thing for me. Like, I just don't think he's coming back. I think he's heading back home. I think he's going to WWE, and that makes a lot of sense. I just don't, there's no real reason to have him return. The boys talk about, you know, this ongoing lawsuit now, an arbitration between the boys, Kevin Kelly and Tony Khan and AEW. The boys, Brand Tate, said AEW pulled the Outrunners from an indie show, and he ripped into Tony Khan saying it was his fault, and the indie show had to be canceled. Got a vendetta against them, yeah.
That is, that issue may or may not be being litigated now in arbitration. Who knows? Another great source of kayfabe is arbitration.
Exactly.
Where it's an absolutely secret process where little legal disputes get resolved. Stephen P. New, their attorney, did appeal, did go to the 11th Circuit and said, I don't like this decision I got in the lower court. Lower court said, well, they've stayed the case, so we can't overturn this yet. So you're stuck with what you've got, I guess. So that means that the original case in the lower court is stayed for the duration of arbitration. What will happen in arbitration?
Who knows?
Can't say.
Can't say at all. Yeah, it's probably Stephen P. You know, he in part of that initial lawsuit, he was talking about class action lawsuit, you know, antitrust and all that.
This is a class action lawsuit. It's for all others similarly situated.
But you think that he would be he's blowing his chance to be part of the AEW legal team if they ever try to file a class action lawsuit against WWE for, you know, all these different arrangements they have and so on and so forth. I mean, SPN is blowing it.
Well, like an antitrust lawsuit or what are you talking about here?
I don't know. I was just trying to make a joke about Steve Pino. Yeah.
Okay. I took you too seriously.
Tony Khan, in response to Saudi Arabia WrestleMania and running a show in opposition to that this week, giving indie promotions and such a chance to have their shows and so on and so forth. Tony Khan said he was very interested in that and said it was having a big show in the spring of 2027. And I was like, okay, it's very interesting. Of course, I think he meant AEW Revolution, which happens in the spring, which is March.
I thought he named Revolution in part of that response.
Well, he did, and that's he talked about Revolution. So I don't know if he just meant big show, being like every show is a big show. So yeah, we're gonna have Revolution. It's gonna be a big show. But he also casually mentioned Revolution again during answer about whether he'd be interested in running Toronto's Rogers Centre, which is the former Sky Dome, of course the partial home of the ongoing World Series, go Blue Jays. So I don't know. He mentioned that. I just wonder if maybe the next stadium show he tries is in the Great White North and John Pollock's backyard, not too far away from you.
Like, I think this is a great opportunity here, which is to express, remind people what AEW's identity could or should be, which is a strong alternative to the mainstream wrestling brand, putting aside whatever it's doing and its trends and popularity and fan interest. W is doing something that a lot of fans are frustrated by, which is taking the entire week of WrestleMania and putting it not only far away from you, but in a country that there's a lot of criticism towards. So I think this is a great opening to capture the traveling wrestling fan whose demand is not going to be consumed to the same degree as it usually is by WWE. So, and look, you've got the two big indie brands and WrestleCon and GCW who need a week to do their usual week of business. I think it's a great opportunity to be a strong alternative.
Yeah. If that happens, I'm curious about the GCW WB relationship, given they've been very friendly. So it's a lot of time between now and 2020.
But aren't the people at AEW and GCW on great terms, right?
I think they're better now. I think there's some talent appearing, but not to the extent as it was before. Doesn't feel like it anyway. Yeah, so we'll see. I wanted to read this quote about video games verbatim. So Tony Khan was asked about video games and are they going to do a console game again? Like, kind of what's going on? He said, "I love pro wrestling. I'll be first to say that I'm not the biggest expert in the world of video gaming. I like to play games, but I'm not the expert. There are great, great experts in the world about it, and I try to take insight and advice from the people in AEW and people around developers. And absolutely, we learned a lot in the making of the game. We could take that in the future. I really believe to make the next game much, much better and learn from the experiences of doing that. But I also think we're having a great year with our wrestling, our TV, and our pay-per-views, and doing all kinds of great things that are our core competencies. It's a great thought. It's a very different question than the ones I've been getting asked about the pay-per-view, but it's a good question. I'm not sure where the future would hold. I do eventually think there'll be further AEW forays into gaming, different kinds of games, mobile games, different concepts, different platforms. I can't say for sure what they'll all be because, again, like I said, I'll never claim to be the world's biggest expert in video gaming, but I like it. I know it's a huge part of a lot of our fans' lives. It's really important to a lot of our fans, and I'm trying to learn from that feedback."
What was the question?
Asked about what's going on with video games.
Does he run this company? Who's in charge?
Allegedly. I mean, Beatnik, who knows? Maybe his sister is telling Tony. No. But I had to read that verbatim. And a very simple question to, are you going to do another Fight Forever console game and, you know, all that stuff? So
do you think this is what it's like to have a conversation with Tony, or is this because he's in public and he knows he's being aggregated?
I think the latter. I think he seems to be a very enthusiastic, exciting person. You can tell when he gets surprised by a question, because he'll say it in the answer. Like, what did I just say? He said, it's a different question. It's a great thought and a very different than the ones that are being asked about the pay-per-view, but it's a good question. And it's pretty simple. Like, he's like, we're still looking at it. And, you know, the other one, we saw some areas of
improvement. The sensitivity there is that the Fight Forever game was a disappointment.
Yeah.
Probably many ways.
Right. But I think that's the thing. He's got to get past the sensitivity. Like, this is business. You know what I mean? Like the NFL. And like, I'm surprised he doesn't have more battle scars from that, from dealing with the terrible Jaguar seasons year after year. You know what I mean? Or
the soccer team that's facing questions about that in the press.
Well, I mean, there's more and more. I see more and more mainstream people in different podcasts and so on talking about, you know, the cons in Jacksonville and kind of like, it's not going to happen, you know? So
it's not going to happen. A winning team.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's always why?
Because the cons.
What? Because what? What about the cons?
Just not good ownership or not a lot of. Bill Simmons actually, I think, mentioned Tony Khan as Khan's kid, if I remember right. There was one thing that he made kind of a reference to him in that. He meant nothing about AEW, but kind of an offhanded comment about his the ability to run the team.
His friend Nick Khan?
Oh, no, no. That would be Tony Khan, the other Khan in wrestling.
Okay. Yeah,
not his good friend, Nick Khan.
No.
Definitely not.
Bill Simmons, who is in like the front row or had real nice floor seats for the Netflix debut, the biggest arena gate in pro wrestling history.
Yeah, same one. Yeah, yeah. Big Boston guy.
He's interviewed Nick a couple times, I think.
He certainly has. Good conversations. Light on in-depth questions, but you know, is what happens.
You may but that would make him look bad if he asked tough questions. He doesn't want to do that. He said so.
Yeah, you can't make him look bad. Who cares about those answers, right? You're gonna make him look bad, look like shit, right? Now he said to Cody. Khan also said to round out this, there's nothing new in a Ring of Honor TV deal. While he's had offers, any deal would have to make it make sense, quote unquote, in the big picture with AEW, and I would hope any deal would be in the framework of the AEW-WD relationship. And led some people to think and talk about, does he wish he had done the ROH-CW deal? And I bet in a truth serum, and one of these lie detector moments, I think he'd probably say, yes, I wish that we did.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because if you sell rights to Ring of Honor to CW, maybe CW doesn't feel like it needs NXT.
Right.
People that therefore then actually watch Ring of Honor.
Mm-hmm. And then could watch AEW talent on Ring of Honor. You don't have to keep it separate. It's you got your broadcast and... Or just do the AEW broadcast deal there. You know, he's really focused on the WBD thing, but I don't know. I just wonder if it's going to bite him in the ass, if Zaz and whoever the new owners would be if they ever sell this thing. I think about that too. Yeah. I think about that too. Conflicts, as we start to round the bend here. Marina Shafir this wasn't really reported that much or discussed, but like she said she had an uncomfortable interaction with a former male coworker in January 2023, which she detailed in an interview with, was it not Renee Paquette? Chris Van Fleet, I think. Chris Van Fleet, rather. Sorry, mm-hmm. I'm mispronouncing that. But yeah, and so I was reading through this, and it was, this happened in AEW. And I don't think Tony Khan's ever been asked about it. It's one of those things that just kind of like floated under the radar. And
she's referring to a coworker in AEW.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're uncomfortable. Bring this up. Uncomfortable.
I'm searching for Marina Shafir, quote, uncomfortable interaction, and I'm finding.
Oh, she was on Soraya's podcast. This was the stories. I go to the chat here, which nobody can see. This was what I was going through. So the encounter happened. So this story was published in July 2025. So this is after All In. Shafir said the encounter happened around the time she wrestled Athena for the Ring of Honor Women's World title, which took place in January 2023. It was on a Wednesday morning. She was on a treadmill. A coworker started behaving oddly in the treadmill next to her. So it doesn't... I assume male coworker.
Somebody I used to work with hopped onto the treadmill next to me, tried to copy my workout. She said this person ended up slipping and taking a back bump on the treadmill.
Yeah.
She stopped her workout, asked if he was okay, and then went to another room. I just going to get the F out of here. And I went into the other room to start my mobility and stuff. I go into this other room to do my mobility. I'm just leaning against the wall, and all of a sudden I get effing shoved from behind as I'm taking some of my bottle water. It wasn't like a soft shove. It felt like I was just tackled. I just paused for a second. I turn around. He's standing over me going like, come on, come on. I did not invite that. I had effing headphones on. I'm minding my own business. I'm like, all right, MF-er. I stood up. I stood southpaw, and she's an MMA fighter. Yeah. Just to F with him, I faked effing left, took a big step. I'm doing play-by-play, and just fucking hooked the F out of him. Just like raised his effing chin. He tried. There's so many F words here. Yeah. He tried to pop up for an effing double, and I effing stuffed it again. My headphones pop out, and I just remember the last thing I remember saying is, "I will effing take your money. Don't ever effing touch me ever again."
Yeah, I need to listen.
This is a male coworker.
Yes. But that was not
not a story.
No, it wasn't. We had something on it. I don't know if anyone else did, but it was just kind of one of those things like, okay. And he's never been asked about it. And I like, that's a kind of a scary thing. Who was the guy? Is he still with the company? Assume it was AEW because
she mentioned, can we recount what is she describing here? She's, so this guy is like bugging her
an while she was working out. An uncomfortable thing. And she was the treadmill thing, tried to copy his workout and he slipped. And then I guess the fact that he.
And then he shoved her.
Yeah, he got physical with her. And not to you know, do it to anyone, but obviously no one with that type of background. I just.
And she punched him.
She
effing hooked the F out of him.
Yeah. Or she faked a left. Yeah.
I don't know what hooked means. Maybe it could mean a submission, but maybe a punch. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So I include that because that's, you know, not obviously not great, but who this person was are still in the company. Maria Shafir's husband is with the company still. I mean, that's a big thing. So that was something. A story that got pushed out there, but like didn't really get any traction. He's never been asked about it.
Has the discipline committee reviewed that incident?
That's a good question. Something that someone should ask on a media call instead of asking storyline questions. Cody Rhodes opening up a little bit, asking, he said he felt disrespected in AEW. Wouldn't stand for it. What's it? I don't know. What is he disrespect about? After a schism with AEW, he's grateful to be with the biggest game in town. He also talked about a book. And of course, I think around the same time, he talked about not really knowing how to handle the AEW portion of that. And so he's in this year, he started to kind of like edge out a little bit and start to talk about a little bit more. He's, you know, and
is it too late to get him to sign an NDA?
I mean, I probably at this point it is. Yeah. He and Brandy have something to say, and they are edging out. And this was the kind of biggest edge out since he left, and the disrespected term, wouldn't stand for it. We're years away from this story finally kind of coming out. You can feel it. You can absolutely feel it. And I don't think he cares about ANDA. I think he knows. I bet he's saying his mind. What is Tony going to actually sue me
for what?
Right. For if he signed an NDA, you know, they agreed not to talk about it, but again, he could violate it. But there's also there's the public part of it of like, how does it look if Tony Khan sues Cody Rhodes for the story? What if Cody Rhodes gets the story out and it makes Tony Khan look bad? He's going to make him look even worse with all this. So just something to watch. There was this MVP and Mike Bailey thing, whatever happened backstage with MVP reportedly hating Mike Bailey, and they've kind of made fun of it since then. But this whole thing about how MVP and the Hurt Business go about things and not wanting to lose, and sorry, the Hurt Syndicate don't want to get, you know, IP violation. I'll have to bleep that out. Right. Danhausen had time added to his AEW contract against his wishes. He returned, I think, once at Final Battle in December, and this guy cannot get out. He's doing a ton of indie dates, but at least he's getting paid, but he's not going to be out till summer.
A guarantee. Like, it's not causing him to miss. I mean, unless WWE wanted to sign him or TNA wanted to sign him,
mm-hmm.
which maybe that's happening.
It could be. Yeah. Big, good friends with CM Punk. We'll see. We learned AEW has, perhaps it's the bigger company, but has tuition reimbursement, which we learned from Deonna Purrazzo. As she revealed that, she was very grateful about that. And of course, going to the great Southern New Hampshire University, about an hour away from me, here I'm recording this right now.
And hearing commercials about it.
That's true. Tony Khan also talked about Deonna Purrazzo, actually a very open answer about her bad match she had in Mexico, and essentially denying that it had anything to do with her not being on AEW TV.
So this is the first time Tony Khan has admitted that something wasn't good or great?
Yes. Yeah, if I remember, he kind of stumbled into the answer, and he had to like...
And the moment in December 2019, he has acknowledged that was not great, and changes had to be made.
Yes. Yes, it was. He just knew.
Punches and yeah.
He knew he had to take control of it, yeah. Tony Khan was also asked a political question from a non-wrestling reporter. This is on a media call. You could tell this was during the All Out media call, whether he felt the company is more left-leaning with Brody King's recent anti-abolish ice shirt, or anti-ice shirt is abolish ice that he wore, the Heyman Page character, and so on. And talking, the reporter asked that, you know, that the, you know, WWE is leaning more into the Trump organization, the Trump presidency, and so on, and kind of how politics.
This is on the media call or the?
Yes, the media call. Yeah. This is on the All Out call.
Okay.
Yeah, politics plays in AEW given WWE's more right-leaning affiliations. And Tony, he answered basically saying that we want talents to be their true selves. What you see is what you get. And he didn't really go into kind of the WWE side of things. And I think Shad has, I think Shad was a contributor to one of Trump's campaigns. And
the inauguration he was. I think you can go like pre-Trump political era, and you can find Shad maybe. I'd have to check the FEC. This is public record. That Shad may have given money to campaigns for Republicans pre 2016 or so. They've both given money to a PAC, the Gridiron PAC, which is like an NFL PAC, which I think you can look up on like Open Secrets, and you'll find that, well, the majority of their money goes to Republicans. Yeah, that's about it. Jake Hager once accused Tony Khan of publicly of being a communist, I believe.
Jake Hager, Jesus. So Tony actually did talk about that, and it finally asked about ticket prices.
Talked about being a communist?
Yes, exactly. He talked about communist ticket prices. Khan said everyone will pay the same price. Khan said AEW has always been about being affordable for families, quote unquote, because we're a family-friendly company. This got weaponized against him because of the subsequent coffin match between John Moxley and Darby
Allin. Friendly company. Families don't try to drown each other in fish tanks. Mm.
That was during Q4, though. So that something clearly changed between the quarters. Yeah, because we're a family-friendly company. Finally, concerns coming up for this quarter. WWE's D sale, does that get any steam behind it? We'll see. Live attendance, we talked about. And what's kind of a little side note with that, a lot of their talents work elsewhere, including the indies, MJF working matches, CMLL, Mercedes working indies all over the place. There's the Grand Prix, a lot of AEW talent there as part of the partnerships. Partnership with New Japan, Samoa Joe is working indie, Eddie Kingston, so on. Again, kind of going this thing of like, if you can see WWE talents, you can only see in WWE, except for very, very extreme cases. AEW talent, not the case. I just kind of wonder about that in the whole live attendance scheme of things.
To interrupt quickly.
Sure.
So we're looking at 2014 and prior, Mitt Romney, looks like his presidential campaign. The Crenshaw, which I think is like the congressman with the eye patch, who's a Republican.
Yes.
The NRC, the National Republican Congressional Committee. This is Shahid Khan, the dad, who yes. I'm sure Tony is grateful for.
And the concern, roster size, they have just a lot of people and a lot of that middle to lower tier. And I think it's
Kelly Loeffler. We can go on and on here.
Is Kelly Loeffler on the roster?
In 2020, Shahid Khan, who works for the Jacksonville Jaguars, gives $2,500 to Georgians for Kelly Loeffler. There's quite a few you can find here.
Let's see. Roster size, I mentioned. We'll see how that goes. Just a lot of the mid and lower tier. And I think it gets to be a little bit distracting. Some people, like Britt Baker, should be used. And
where is she? Where is Britt Baker?
I know. A question that's asked a lot. And I especially just given.
She's great, and he would love to have her back with the company.
He should have brought her to Pittsburgh then, if he really believed that. Her hometown, you know? I don't know. It's one of those things where clearly everyone knows she's not coming back. So she's getting a check, great. But she's not working, so why aren't you using her? You know, I don't know. And also, where's the money going? So where is all the TV money and so on? You get this new deal. Where's it all going? Has he
pay for the costs?
Well, has he brought in new internal infrastructure? He brought in new sponsorship people, new this, new that. Like, where's the money going?
You're talking about building out the corporate infrastructure to enhance monetization of AEW in a variety of ways, including sponsorships and merchandising, consumer products, live event promotion, perhaps.
Yeah, that's my thing. And I, this sticks in my head because when Dave was talking about this, his assumption was that they were going to reinvest a lot in it. I don't think it was based on any facts. I think it was just he was thinking that. Yeah, they would bring in
largely staffed with people who have prior experience in the wrestling business, either with WWE or their other social connections of people who worked with WWE or worked with AEW already. It contrasts to WWE, which seems like it's full of Endeavor and CAA people. At least let's take sponsorships narrowly. I mean, who's going to be able to make sponsorship deals and government site fee deals? I mean, WWE's got the better product to sell in terms of that area, but
yeah.
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 And you look at their, you know, I do get the impression they are using a lot of the same services, maybe some of the same vendors and contractors that the Jaguars do, as opposed to, I guess, you know, exploring and building their own relationships.
Yeah.
That are best suited for this business.
Yeah. I just think about the long term. And if you're going to be around the long term, then invest long term and be like, just have your fans talk about, you got to get this.
Unless it's consumption, in which case, have a great time.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's it. From here, you can win a little bit long, but hey, we're laughing. We get into it. I mean, Mitt Romney's name got brought up on this show. I did not expect that when I woke up this morning, but here we are. You can hear Brandon on Wrestle, or you can at Pollock and Thurston every Wednesday on Post Wrestling and the WrestleNomics podcast feeds, also on YouTube. You can subscribe at WrestleNomics on their Patreon, on his Patreon. We're on a Substack as well. $5 a month gets you everything you need to know. $10 a month gets you more spreadsheets than you ever could imagine.
And Georgia Senator David Perdue.
Mm. He'll be on WrestleNomics as well. Is that what you're
reviewing? No, he will not be.
Anything else to plug? Things coming up you're working on, or anything you want to tease people with?
Congressman John Rutherford of Florida. WrestleNomics.com is where you can find everything. There's a Patreon there where you get all the analysis that we have for TV ratings, attendance, YouTube, as we are in. You thought that ratings were going to be, you need help. I need to create anxiety in the consumer right now. You can't understand the TV ratings. Don't know what's going on. You need to sign up to patreon.com/WrestleNomics so that you can understand what the TV ratings mean in an era where they are increasingly hard to understand, in terms of not only do we have some shows that are being simulcast on both streaming platforms and traditional platforms like AEW programs are, but now we've got, you thought 2025 was going to be the year of ratings chaos. Well, it just got even more chaotic because at the end of September, at the end of this Q3, we had Big Data Plus panel come in, wreak even more havoc on our understanding of TV ratings. So we've got you covered to the best of anyone's ability can cover you right now.
What it's really created, Brandon, is a white castle of fear.
It is. That was innovative at the time, I guess.
Mm, certainly was. So until next time, thanks a lot, Brandon. We'll talk to you next time. And again, stay out of the white castle of fear. Okay, big thanks to Brandon Thurston for going a little overtime there. It's a good conversation. Hopefully you had a good time with it. You can let me know on Twitter, X, or Blue Sky, JOSHNASON. Of course, let Brandon know as well. And hopefully you enjoy that, and looking forward to speaking to him down the road. And also, who I'm going to be speaking to down the road, as I mentioned, Mike Della Camera. Yes, Mike Della Camera, who's does all of our AEW previews for F4W Online. He will be on this show. We're going to record this Friday, and hopefully, may release it probably later that day. Why not? Or even Saturday, perhaps. And we're going to talk about non-business and a bunch of other AEW stuff. Not over the last quarter, but I was going through some notes. I'm clearing up some stuff out of my online notes and all that stuff. You know, just kind of keep things throughout the year. I had a bunch of random AEW stuff, and I got some other thoughts on the current day. And I want to kind of just brain dump them out, see what Mike thinks, get his thoughts, and so on. And do what we do, which is talk about professional wrestling and talk about AEW and things we like, things we don't like, and the like. So I think you'll enjoy us, and it's a bunch of stuff, some very unique stuff, I think, coming up on Friday. And with that, I'm going to bid you adieu. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day. I know it. So I greatly appreciate the time you spend me on this very show. It means a lot, and as we it'll mean even more in the Year in Review series, which starts, I believe, next week. Leave next week. Lining up guests. Got a few locked in already. So I'm looking forward to doing the deep dive back in the year that was 2025. What a year it was. And I mean, we're not even in November yet. What a year it is yet to be. And that begins in earnest next week. So until next time, this has been Josh Nason. Insert catchphrase here.